super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake, mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Well, welcome to the Grindhouse, and our guest this week, I actually, not that I met him physically in 1977, I turned the corner on 42nd Street, and right atop the Rialto Theater was this huge mock-up of a face staring down at me, and it was Michael Berryman from The Hills Have Eyes, and he's a Grindhouse legend. It's our pleasure to welcome him to the show. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, good evening, Pete. Nice to have you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I saw you a couple months ago with... I guess it was Motor City Nightmares, and I think you were just coming off rotor cuff repair surgery.
Oh, that's true, man. That's true. The right shoulder had three tears in it, and I found a good sports medicine surgeon, and they sewed it all back together and put my biceps tendon, reattached that with three screws. When I go through TSA screening, they go, oh, there they are.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's healing well. We're doing really good. We're doing our daily exercise, and it gets better every day. We're about 6 months out from having a full recovery. Yeah, but you have to do your day to day PT on it, so it's good.
Yeah, I remember you were saying you were like really down with that. You know, you were really hitting it full force and stuff. So what you've been doing a lot of stuff. I noticed lately. Ton of stuff. Lords of Salem, Dining in Hell. I think the last time we talked, you were just involved in something called Below Zero, if I'm right.
Oh, that's right. About 2.5 years ago in Canada, in Ontario, I did a wonderful film called Below Zero, starring, Eddie from... Sarah Connor's son and Terminator. I can't think of his last name right now.
Furlong.
Anyway, Eddie Furlong. Sorry, Eddie. And Eddie plays a screenwriter that can't meet a deadline. He winds up being locked into a meat locker, which is owned by a butcher, which happens to be me. And my son lived there. And we don't know he's locked in there, but he has to finish the screenplay within a week or else his agent will fire him. So he deals with his demons, and it's been all around the world at film festivals. It's a great psychological drama, kind of like a Hitchcock. It's called Below Zero. And then we have a film next month with Eric Roberts called Self Storage. We play a couple of Vietnam vets that have a storage unit, and things happen out in the woods. It's very well written. And I did finish a film, I think, just after I saw you last time, Pete, and it was on an island off of Rhode Island. And it's called Erebus. I guess that was the name of a ship that sank a long time ago in the harbor is cursed. And that should be coming out pretty soon. And the rest, you know, is history.
Yeah, you're back with Rob Zombie and Lords of Salem.
That's true. We were hoping to do a couple of scenes that were deleted from the script in Lords of Salem, and we were hoping for a couple extra days to do scenes with Sid Haig and myself and Richard Lynch, and so I don't think that got put in. But what we have is very pretty powerful. The opening sequence with Sid and myself is just wicked, with the witches and the fires and the torment, the hellish torment. Yeah, so that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we just lost Richard like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you would work with him.
Every day is a gift, man. Pardon?
Yeah, I know. You worked with him quite a few times, if I remember correctly, with Ruggiero Deodato.
Yes, Richard and I have worked in, I believe, four continents. So it's you know, it's a dear loss for a friend that you get to know real well, and a very talented, powerful artist. Yeah, I mean, being in a film with Richard Lynch is like, it's kind of a treat. Yeah. But hey, we're still here, though.
I know. I met him once back in the Chiller days. I picked him up at the airport, and he was telling all the stories about Shoot and Cut and Run, and you know how crazy Ruggiero was, and how crazy the conditions were and stuff. But you're right. He was a great talent, and you know we're all going to miss him terribly. It's just you know it's a shame he was taken so soon. But like you say, we're still here, so.
Yeah, Richard's his performances were always just so powerful, right? You know. Really to the max. It's very, very impressive. Yeah, one of my favorites. Yeah, we have a heat wave here right now. It's in the 80s. Oh my goodness. How are you guys doing out there?
Todd's roasting. I don't know. It's about 80 in here with the air on. It's the best I could get it up to. I adopted two dogs since I last saw you too, so they're driving me crazy.
Oh, what kind are they?
As far as I can ascertain, they're like a lab German short-haired pointer mix. They're two sisters. They had found them wandering on the streets, and I just, for some reason, went down to this pound to check out the dogs, and they were there, and then I went back and got them. So.
Oh, that's cool. What are their names?
Boo-Boo and Bootsy. Bootsy. Yeah.
That's sweet. Well, you know, people need to know that you're a kind-hearted fellow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It kills my image. I got them and I got two lizards, too. So.
Well, now the lizards, you know, they help keep you centered on your image.
Yeah, I know.
Reptiles? He hangs out with reptiles. What kind of crazy guy is this guy?
Well, you used to live with wolves, so, you know.
I know. I have to admit, it's one of the more beautiful mornings having a cup of coffee and... You know, nice cool breeze coming through the kitchen window, and the wolves start waking up and singing. Yeah, it's pretty darn nice. Yeah. So, anyone listening, if you've never been to a wolf sanctuary, give it a go early in the morning and late in the evening, and you'll hear them sing. Yeah. I lived with critters before.
Yeah.
Hell, I live with critters now.
what, you have horses now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we have our horses. Yeah. We have our horses and our ranch. We have walnuts. We have bags and bags of walnuts from last season. I was thinking of using them to, you know, like put a big blanket over it and make a couch. But hey, in a pinch, it would be food, man. It's got to be prepared.
Yeah. So you're hitting the convention circuit this summer?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I just finished a show about a month ago in St. Louis, in the Big M.O. That was pretty nice.
Which one was that?
Yeah. Oh, what the heck is it called?
Contamination, was that the one?
Contamination, thank you very much. Yes, it was. And the thing about it was the people that put it on, and also the hotel had just had a full renovation, and it was really, really nice. A good time was had overall, and we have always have a charity auction, you know, on Sunday, and that went really well. And lots of zombies and costumes and all that wonderful paraphernalia at a convention. I love it.
Yeah. Was Vernon Wells there too?
Pardon me?
Was Vernon Wells there too?
Yes, he certainly was. It was nice to hook up with Vernon. You know, he actually, Vernon Wells is, he's like a person, I think he's on the board of directors for the Wolf Connection. It's a wolf program in just north of Los Angeles in the high desert where people can, you know, see wolves and understand habitat preservation, all that good stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Have you seen any really good movies besides Twilight, Breaking Dawn?
No, the coolest thing I have seen lately, and we just had them on last week, was Astro Zombies M4 Invaders from Cyberspace, a Ted Michaels film. I thought was pretty cool. strictly low budget, yeah. But that's Ted, you know, and, you know, Ted's Ted. He's great.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's yeah, his stuff is classic.
I know. No, you know, the funny part with him, you know, he's been doing this for like close to 60 years, and he still has the same, you know, exuberance that he had, you know, 50 years ago. He's just, you know, you're good.
That's really, really true. You know, Ted's got, he's got that explosive personality that's contained at the same moment. You know, it's just it's a pretty amazing presence, you know.
Yeah, he's just great to have on. You know, like he's like 83 years old and he's still going. And he's got two films in the works.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, you got to do it as long as you can keep telling stories. You know, keep telling stories. And then when it's all over, someone will write a story about you. You know, what else can you do? Hey, that's almost a song.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Where's your next convention appearance now?
My next convention, I'm actually looking at some of my printouts on my desk. It looks like it will be in Birmingham, Alabama. It's called ATROX.
Never heard of that. Must be a new one.
It's a new one. It's October, second week in October. So, going to one that we've never been to before, and sometimes they're a surprise. You know.
Yeah.
But you know, Judy seems to like, you know, conversing with them, and that's always a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how's the rest of the gang?
Ken and Pam are down. They're down in, I think it's Frightmare Film Fest or something down in Louisville.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're down there this week. I think Sid's there too.
Oh, good for him. That's a great town. I love that city.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have a lot of fun in Louisville.
Yeah, I wanted to go down, but since I got the dogs and stuff, I'm sort of tied up now. So,
yeah,
responsibilities.
It's worth it though, because animals really kind of—I don't know, man. For me, animals—I don't know what I'd do without them. They kind of every day of my life is pretty much dictated by animals, as you know, Pete. But I think it enriches my life, and it really gives me, surprisingly, I have a lot better time with them than I do with a lot of people. So I'd rather just hang out with them.
Yeah, I'll give you that. they enrich my life and also my carpet too. So,
that
it's
is
a wonderful thing, you know.
So, Michael, what do you in your entire long career? Which I mean, you've been doing this for just incredible amount of time now, and you're considered an icon of not only the horror genre, but as Pete was talking, the exploitation genre and the action film as well. In your years of doing this, when you look back on your career, what are the highlights for you? What's something that just pops right into your head?
Well, as far as I'm thinking an action type film, basically some of those are in those genres. Right away, I go to, what do they have to do physically? You know, having your lines and knowing your character is one thing. You know, going from here to there. Oh, how am I getting there? And like in The Hills Have Eyes, the first time I ever experienced Well, how does the scene play out? I had moccasins on. I had to walk up the side hill in a desert hill with shale and rock and cactus with stickers and then possible snakes if you slipped and fell. And you had to run like it was effortless because you're Pluto from The Hills Have Eyes. You've lived out here forever. So the director, okay, you've lived out here forever. You know, like, four generations, you are expert, you are like a lizard running across the desert. And I go, well, that's just a great suggestion, but I have to fucking do it, you know. And I learned right away that actors, even though how well you know your lines, you can slip and fall and cut the palm of your hand when you land on that rock or whatever. And then, you know what, you got to go back and then, okay, take two, and you do it all over again. So I think we're possibly crazy.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
In a good way.
Well, yeah, and you've done a lot of parts that require you to do some pretty wild stuff, too.
Well, yes. Another real notable would be I wound up in the Amazon forest down in Guyana with Ruggiero Deodato, who is a lovely fellow, and he can also be a little bit mischievous. And I mean, I sat down on a log, and someone said, "Don't move," and they killed this real dangerous snake. Would have killed like 10 people. If it would have bit me, I would have been dead in a minute. And I go to my director and go, "Oh, man, you drag us down here." And it was after a couple of weeks of this, you know, so our tempers were short, and it's difficult. You know, and you're in the middle of nowhere, but beautiful. So we all just agreed that we're going to be Italian and just appreciate the beauty of everything. And we could all get killed instantly, so it's a luck of the draw, so we're all in this together. And to me, that's the not Hollywood approach to making a film in a working situation. The Italians, they do it from this whole other perspective, and I got to give it to the Italians. You know, very crafty, and we had a lot of fun, but it was dangerous down there.
Well, I imagine it was. I remember just reading different stories about the making of some of those films, and honestly, what these directors and crew people and actors put themselves through for this art is pretty unbelievable. And a lot of people, you know, they don't look at it the same way I do. I look at it as like this transcendent kind of art, because to me, those movies were the ones that I wanted to see. I didn't want to go see A Star Is Born. I wanted to go see Cut and Run. You know, that's what I was looking for in a theater. And those are the movies that put butts in the seats. I hate to say it. Hollywood, we know for years, has had delusions of grandeur, and they've always made these movies that never put butts in the seat. And then movies like yours would come along, and suddenly there's butts in the seats. And not only were there butts in the seats, but they were rowdy butts, and the whole place was just a party. And that's the way it should have been, man, because to me, those movies spoke to the people, and the other movies may speak to film critics or whoever, but where are they today? And now there's people like me out there scouring the internet looking for, you know, Cut and Run in its uncut form, you know, and trying to get it on Blu-ray. That's, you know, the kind of thing going on.
I'm finding out that over time, because every time there was a new media in art, and especially in film, which is what I've been doing for a long, long time, and my fellow artists would go, "Oh, here's a new of the medium." And a DVD can become available by enough people generating an interest, even though it's stuck in a 35-millimeter vault somewhere, and they do pop up, and they are licensed, and they are the real deal, and they're beautiful, because I just recommend going to lots of film festivals and conventions, and you can come across some really nice stuff. But I like those kinds of films. I always found them adventurous, I would say, was the first effect they had on me. Like a good comic book, you know. Oh, wow, what's this?
Yeah, something that grabs you and holds your interest.
Well, you know, speaking of comic books, you did a movie called The Giver, which was kind of like a comic book. It was live-action comics right there.
That, thank you for reminding me. I got to work with Luke Skywalker, for crying out loud.
Heck yeah!
On the L.A. River. He was cool, man. God, I mean, how cool was that? He was a total pro and just like a nice guy. Like, I'd known him for years, and we still surfing at, you know, at Venice Beach. A lot of fun. But yeah, great comic book, Japanese kind of production, and we were pulpy. It was very pulp. The Geyser character, the splitting of the muscles, splitting through my sleeve, you know, everything over exaggerated, because of course we're going to be even more over the top when our faces and bodies transform into zoonoids. And I gotta admit, Screaming Matt George is a master makeup effects genius, and he made that art when the heads of the zoonoids start to grow in Geyser. They're beautiful. They're really, really awesome. I'd like to have a couple in my house.
Oh, I agree.
That's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah, well, I remember a film you worked on with, it was a Fred Alwyn Ray film, and it had like a who's who of character actors. It was Armed Response, and it had Lee Van Cleef.
Awesome.
Yeah. Any memories of that that shoot?
You know, pure fun. Working with Fred Olen Ray was just pure fun. We always, he always had that, you know, he was never ever sinister. He was always thinking, and he had that shit-eating grin and confident eyebrow that he would present. And I would be watching him, you know, because making a movie, sometimes you just have to bullshit your way through, you know, so you can get things happening, and then you do, and everybody's happy. But he could really think on his, and as a director, we would be running out of light, for instance, and the sun's coming up, and, you know, we can only have this location for a certain period of time, and he'll just sum up a couple pages really quick, you know, in 40, 45 minutes or something. But he was a delight to work with, and his movies are campy. They're almost kind of an homage to George Powell, you know. You know, some of his stuff is pretty campy, but in the tradition of just pulp, you know, enjoy it. Yeah, Fred Olen Ray movie is a good watch anytime.
Oh yeah, I've always enjoyed all Fred stuff. How is it like working with Lee Van Cleef on that film?
his presence was very powerful. It seemed to me that I could sit down at a bar with him, and we would probably polish off a fifth of really good scotch, or really old scotch, or some whiskey, and that would, I'd pay the consequences later. But he was intriguing enough to share a bottle with. In other words, he had history behind his eyes, I guess is the best way to put it. And he was really down to earth and friendly. You know, he was a lot of fun. Jack Palance was the same way. Jack had that, you know, he had not an oval strong jaw like the other guy. You know, he had that square jaw, Jack Palance. You know.
Yeah, I know. I'm
very
like
very effective.
Yeah, I'm like a huge Lee Van Cleef fan, going back to the spaghetti westerns and when he was a heavy in the 50s and stuff. So.
Well, to watch him, you know, work, and then having playing opposite Mako, and also having him being the patriarch of the family and all that stuff and non-response was pretty awesome. Actually, there was a billboard with me, Lee Van Cleef, and David Carradine, and on Hollywood Boulevard. I couldn't believe it. Oh, wow, there I am. I'm on a freaking billboard. So I think it was a 24-hour diner. I get Ships, I think that's the name of it. And I sat down and had a cheeseburger at about 12:30 in the morning, looking at my car parked on the billboard with my name and my face on it with those other fine gentlemen. And I watched the 9-passenger station wagon just come out of nowhere and park its engine in the back seat of my car.
And I go,
wow, you know what? And just then, I swear to God, my cheeseburger and chocolate shake had just arrived, and the waitress looks out because she's looking over my shoulder, and she sees my expression, and she goes, oh, I'll just keep this warm and cold for you. And I go, no, I'll eat it now. I'm obviously not going anywhere. But it was a real pretty picture at first, and in an instant. So my lesson to say is, if you're ever on a billboard, don't park your own car underneath the billboard. Park it around the corner. Just good advice.
That must have been really cool, though, to see yourself up on a big billboard like that.
It was humbling and exciting at the same moment. It was intriguing and satisfying also.
Yeah, it's too bad. I don't think anybody ever took a picture of, like I was saying when we opened up, that you know, you as Pluto, they had some kind of huge mock-up of you over the marquee of the Rialto on 42nd Street.
That
was like you could see it from, if you were walking down, I think it was 7th Avenue toward 42nd Street. It was right in the corner, and that's all you saw was your face up there at that point. That movie actually did screw the shit out of me, and still, if I rewatch it, it still gives me the creeps today. So, thank you very much for doing that.
You're so welcome, my friend. We love what we do, and those that appreciate the same humor, you know, keep smiling. You know, we keep doing this, and the days go on, and someday you're not here anymore. But in the meantime, go to the movies, get some popcorn. popcorn, relax, listen to the radio, read a book, take care of another. Yeah, we're pretty happy these days. You know, we don't watch the news. You know, enough to be educated, but not enough to be just terrified. And you know, you make some choices, make tomorrow a little better day. And
If you got anything you want to promote before we get off, or
absolutely. Be looking for a release of the movie Below Zero with Eddie Furlong and myself, and also be looking forward to a movie called Self Storage, which we film next month in Rhode Island. In the meantime, just keep checking the internet where I might be, because you know what? As important as I am, the powers that be don't always tell me where I'm supposed to go and when. At least for my boss to tell me yesterday. That's how I roll. But we'll see you at a show, and Pete, take care, and everybody listening.
You too. Thanks, Michael. It's great having you on. Well, I'm sure we'll have you back soon, and you know, I'll catch you on the road somewhere.
Always. Be safe.
Thank you, brother.
Take care.
Good night.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it was great having Michael on. Still, while we were doing a couple other things, you know, in the past couple of weeks, you know, we lost, and this slipped through the cracks too. Luke Askew passed away at 80 years old, and Luke was in a lot of grindhouse films: Rolling Thunder, Beast Within. He was in that Bill Paxton directed movie. I can't remember the name of it now. You know what I'm talking about?
Frailty, right?
Yeah. Culpeper Cattle Company, a lot of westerns, you know, and unfortunately he passed away also. You know, we were just saying about Richard Lynch, and like I said, you know, I picked up Richard at the airport, you know, bringing him back to Chiller Theater, and we were in the car bullshitting because we were stuck in traffic, and he was telling me all the crazy stuff that, you know, Ruggiero would put him through and all that other stuff. And, you know, the funny thing is Michael had told me a lot of crazy stuff too. And you know, you meet Ruggiero at a convention. What a gentleman. What a nice guy. You know, just a pleasure to hang out with and talk with, and so appreciative of fans and stuff. And so was Richard, you know, the one time I saw him at Chiller. And I know there was plans in the works maybe to get him to Wasteland for the next show, but unfortunately that's not going to happen now. So it's like, you know, Michael says, we're still here and we should appreciate each other, you know, and unfortunately, there has been a lot of scuttlebutt on the internet about conventions, who's screwing who, who's doing this, who's doing that. And, you know, people try to get me into these discussions, and I'm, you know, really pretty much tired of the whole thing. And I just don't understand why people can't enjoy the genre for the sake of enjoying the genre. I mean, you know, I was on Movies Hate Us. It was a Movies Hate You. I don't know.
Movies Hate You.
Movies Hate You, whatever the fuck Rob's show is. And, you know, we had brought that up, and both Rob and I were both losing our shit over this stuff because, you know, some of the stuff just gets so out of hand and stupid that it just takes away from the enjoyment of anything. I mean, you know, if your focus is to look at a new release and just discover that it's missing 1/10 of a second on a certain frame, you don't have a fucking life. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry. Some of the stuff just takes it too far. You know, it's one thing to enjoy it, another thing to just pick it apart. You know, and it's funny, I was on Amazon, I was looking at some reviews of my stuff, and a lot of people pick me apart, and, you know, things like that. Well, you know, God bless you. That makes you happy, picking me apart. You know, knock yourself out. The thing is, I'm working on a couple of things now where I realize that I have a lot of stuff laying around here I'll never transfer, you know, to DVD. It's just not going to happen. You know, between the economy all fucked up, the piracy, all the other bullshit, it's not going to happen. But up to a couple things. I'm selling off a lot of the 8mm stuff, and I'm replacing it with some stuff that's better that I feel that, you know, maybe things will lighten up and I can release some features down the road that have never actually seen the light of day. Some really rare and obscure storefront features. So I got that in the back of my mind, and I did make an acquisition already, and there's a chance I may get more. But, you know, everybody's trying out there, you know, desperately to hold on and make a buck and stuff. And, you know, as you know, this, you know, Saturday, last Thursday night, the healthcare bill was constitutionally, whatever the fuck it was, with whatever that means. And, you know, I don't know what's going on with this country. It just seems that certain people are trying to buy the presidency. It just seems to me that the Republican agenda is not the best man for the office. It's who they can put in to get the black guy out. So none of this is sitting well with me. A lot of people are upset. A lot of people are pissed off. And a lot of people are uncertain about the future. And, you know, you have every right to be. This whole corporate mentality is affecting everything from the movies we watch to the food we eat. It's ridiculous. I mean, everything's sanitized now. You know, the indie guys throw a bunch of stuff out, but to be honest with you boys, most of the stuff that I've seen lately has been dreck. And that goes with the big budget stuff, too. There's nothing that gets me excited anymore. Nothing. Which is sad. And, you know, you got to support certain things and, you know, I don't know how to say this. You know, you just can't go with the flow anymore. You got to make waves. We've been too complacent for a long time. And, yeah, people on the internet bitch about films and bitch about this and bitch about that. It's not changing anything. Unfortunately, what's happened, except for certain people, is they've run out of ideas. And they're just recycling, you know, more and more things, which is stupid because... You know, I actually heard that someone's planning to make a remake of The Cutthroats 9. Why? Why bother? What could you possibly add to that film? You know, what people don't seem to understand is when they remake all this crap, the remake shoves the original sometimes into the background, and then the original is forgotten. And then people take it for granted that, the remake or the revision is the original. So, you know, in case of, you know, we already got over the whole fucking Django thing, and, you know, after Tarantino gets done bastardizing that, the original Django will be long forgotten. It'll be a black, you know, ex-slave who shoots white, you know, white bad guys.
Well, so case in point, you've got to realize the buyers for these stores and for online stores and also for really retail stores that are still available, they don't sometimes understand the history of a film. So the other day I was like, hey, why in the heck don't you have Halloween 2? Well, we've got it right there. I go, no, this is the remake. Why don't you have the original? And they're like, well, they didn't even have it listed in their system. They have one thing listed because whoever the person was that put together their catalog only bothered, they just thought it was a double release of the same title. And they don't even know because these people don't do research anymore. Most of them worked at Applebee's and now they get a job as a movie ordering person. They have no idea what the hell they're doing. They don't do research. So
no, well, the bottom line is that the original Halloween 2 will not sell to anybody who walks into that store. Because the people who walk into that store, you know, okay, you have a certain amount of money, obviously, you put aside to buy this shit, and, you know, to a certain extent, so do I. But I usually buy it online now, because it's fucking ridiculous to walk in a store and get... I mean, I couldn't find Haney Calder in fucking Blockbuster. And that, not Blockbuster, Best Buy. So that's all we got around here. There's nothing else. You know, so I'm forced to buy it online, which I'll probably have to buy that Django, you know, kill thing online too. But, you know, my point is that, you know, your DVD buying public now isn't guys like us anymore. We already have this stuff, or most of us have it. They're catering to the new crowd, and that's unfortunate for us. And I always said that, you know, somebody could make a lot of money if they created a store that catered people between 40 and 50 and 60. You know, that kind of music, that kind of movies, you know, knowledgeable salespeople that can explain these complicated fucking gadgets to assholes like me with no fucking attention span. So I always thought that, you know, somebody could make a fucking killing if they did that, but they won't. Because they can sell crap to people who don't know any better. That's all it is. I mean, Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie one, you know, the thing with zombie is, and like, to me, it's overkill is, why do you got to stab somebody 40-something fucking times? There's nothing left. You're basically doing a fucking, you know, the Rambo revision where he was turning people into fucking, you know, human jelly with a machine gun. You know, there's killing and there's overkill. You know, it's sort of like, everybody's on, I should get on this kick too with the whole Jerry Sandusky thing, that fucking piece of shit's finally behind bars and shit like that. And you don't think somebody's going to get to him because Dahmer was in protective custody and somebody turned his head into fucking, you know, grape jelly with a fucking mop handle. So, My point is, you don't have to go to that fucking extreme. You know, there was a time where you didn't have to show all the gore. It was a rarity, and then it was like that was the payoff. Then the payoff became more extreme, more grotesque, for lack of better words. So everybody's desensitized to this shit. I mean, there was a time when, you know, if a baby got killed, people would stand up and fucking start screaming, oh my God, they killed a baby. Now it's fucking passé. So there's nothing new anymore, and I honestly don't think, you know, you're going to get anything new anymore. You know, and people were on that whole Prometheus kick and this and that, the other thing about how it's this and how it's that. You know something? I'm really happy I lived through the time period I lived through and saw all this good shit, because now everything's just a fucking rehash of the same thing. And it's just not, you know, there was a lot of alien knockoffs and things like that, but they were fun. These aren't fun anymore. They're fucking, you know, dumb.
Well, they are kind of, well, at least in the case of Prometheus, it's kind of a connected deal. But yeah, you know, the rehashes back in the day, we had a good time. And a lot of those I actually liked better than I did the original Alien, because even though I love the original Alien and I think it's a pretty brilliant movie, it's also very slow. And if I just want to go and have a good time with a monster movie or an alien movie, movies like Forbidden World to me and Galaxy of Terror, I'd rather watch those. I actually find myself watching those a lot more than I do Alien. So
and Creature. You know, Alien was a 30s-style haunted house movie. That's what it was, in outer space.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all it was.
I have to tell you, Creature was Bill Malone, man. What a movie. I thought that movie was great.
Kinski in there, completely over the top and shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that one. A lot of people
That was the best thing Bill ever did.
I think I would agree with that. I really would. I think he's an underrated guy. He's got talent, but yeah, I think that's the best thing he did.
Yeah.
At least that I watched.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the killer part is, you know, that's another film that's like, you know, a public domain film for some reason. I don't know how that happened.
I don't either.
You know, it's on, like, shitty fucking labels, you know, and the print's okay, but, you know, nice widescreen printer, that would be nice, you know?
It's kind of crazy because it is such a, you know, there's a lot of us that do care a lot about that film and remember it. So, but there's also a lot of people that have never heard of it. But that's kind of cool because the latest Fango, or maybe the couple issues ago, they did do a retrospective on that, which made me kind of happy.
Oh, they actually did something in Fango. It was a retrospective instead of... Oh, well, then the assholes aren't there anymore, so...
Well, yeah, that's what I was saying. You know, it's got new people there, and they seem to really love horror, which is always nice.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. All these magazines are all about the new stuff, and I just can't get into it anymore. It's just like, you know, I'm glad, you know, Mike and Sid and all them guys are on the, you know, the, you know, new Rob Zombie movie. You know, I'm glad Mike just works all the time. He's never been, like, you know, slow.
Right.
He's got like 60, over 70 films under his belt already, you know?
Of course, yeah.
So.
They call him a working man.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, he's a guy that never slows down. He's just one of those guys. He's just so happy to be there, you know, and, you know, just a great, great person. You know, I'm glad we got him for that, you know, the half hour we had him for, you know, until we couldn't squeeze more out of him, but, you know.
Well, I'm pleased, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, you know, he's done so many interviews, you know, in print and on, you know, on DVDs and stuff about all this stuff. It's like, you know, you don't want to rehash the same shit. That's why I was, you know, I wanted to get into the armed response and thing like that.
Right.
And he's right. Him and Lee could have killed a, you know, quality bottle of scotch at a bar. Definitely.
That's awesome. That's kind of stuff I like, man. I like to hear about these stories that, you know, because, I mean, that's what it's all about. It's being right there in the action, you know.
Yeah, see, that's my argument. Like, another, you know, going back to the whole convention thing, it's not such an argument. I says, why wouldn't you want to have a guy like, you know, Ted Michaels or Gary Kent or, you know, Mike Berryman, you know, guys like that at the convention? And, you know, also, like, oh, well, they don't draw. I mean, don't draw what? You want to have the same hoard out guests that you have at every fucking convention, you know, same shit. And what do you learn from that? You learn nothing. I mean, when these guys gave fucking talks up at Wasteland and shit, man, we had fucking standing room only. I mean, people want to hear these stories. They want to learn shit, you know, up there. I don't know why it's so different everywhere else, you know? I really don't.
Makes sense.
But it's almost like, I don't know if we said this on Rob's show, but I'll say it right here. Some of this fan celebrity stuff is almost like the Hooker John stuff, because you're paying $20 for an autograph and a couple minutes of their time, and they're in turn whoring themselves out to you, you know, for that little amount of time. And the weird thing is that, you know, a lot of fans actually believe that these people are there, you know, because, you know, they want to be there for the fans. You know, some of them are, some of them aren't, but that's where the priorities are all messed up. And it's like, you know, oh yeah, I got the so-and-so. I talk to him every time I see him. And like, if you ran into him on the street, he wouldn't be talking to you, you know? You're paying to talk to this guy. That's what it comes down to. I mean, I'm lucky, you know, and a few other people I know are lucky that we have, you know, the relationship we have with a few of these guys. But, you know, they're people just like us. And that's why, you know, I loved having Ted on last week, you know, because there's a guy who's done it all and, you know, gets very little credit for a lot of shit. You know, he's overshadowed by the Romeros and the Carpenters, you know, and people like that. But, you know, he was right in there from the get-go. And, you know, to me, you know, his stuff will stand the test of time. The same with, you know, stuff that Michael's been in, the original Hills Have Eyes, you know, Last House on the Left. You know, these things will stand the test of time because they're unique. And even though they were remade, the remakes pale in comparison to the original. You can't top some of this shit. It comes down to that.
Well, I have a confession to make. I really love that Alexander Aja's Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, that don't get me wrong. I liked it, too. I'm not disrespecting that.
Wasn't that a good one?
Yeah. That was one of the few remakes that actually worked for me, because it's obvious that, you know, he had a love for what he was doing and wanted to, you know, capture the spirit of the original, which they pretty much did, you know, in a little more hardcore way. But when you got, you know, Greg Nicotero and, you know, K&B Effects doing this stuff, what do you expect? So yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Oh, you definitely got your money's worth on that one. You know, that was a good remake. But, you know, for every, you know, quote, good remake. Did I hear somebody's trying to remake Jaws?
I hope not.
Yeah. Well, they're going to have the CG sharks that Corman uses all the time. They'll look good. Why not? Killer shark movies. Another weird, twisted subgenre that spawned how many films?
Yeah, that's pretty weird, man. In all honesty, the whole Sci-Fi Channel has all, like, become these weird shark movies now, and it really kind of freaks me out.
You know, it's like this whole weird, you know, man-eating fish subgenre. Like, you had, what did Jaws go to 5?
Jaws went to 3, I think.
I think it went to 5.
I did not know that.
I think it went to 5.
Golly, you'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I think I went to 5. I mean, you know, what the fuck? I mean, you know, it's a movie show. We can look that up.
I thought they only had 3 of them.
I don't know, but I'll tell you.
After 3D, I thought people got smart.
No, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
Okay, wait a minute. There was a 4.
Okay.
There was a 3D one, and there was a 4. I'm just curious. Maybe, was there a 5? There was a Jaws in Japan.
Oh, my.
Yeah. This is very bad. There was Cruel Jaws, Jaws the Revenge. All right, then there was, remember the one they yanked out of the theaters, Great White?
Yeah.
It was The Last Shark, that's another one. Oh, there's a whole bunch of fucked up shit. Swamp Shark, Mega Shark of Malibu, Mako Jaws of Death, that was a Greffey one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was Richard Jekyll, Harold Cicada, John Davis Chandler. Yeah, then you had, what is it, Shark Night or something? The one just came out recently.
Oh, yeah. Another one of those in the water movies.
Yeah, then, you know, Mega Shark, and then Sharks of Venice. Something. There's got to be no bullshit. There's got to be 20 or 30 different shark movies besides the Jaws things. They're all over the place.
I got one that Fred Olen Ray did recently that was about a shark that comes up on land and is walking around chewing on people, called Super Shark, I believe. And then there's the two-headed shark movie that his son made at the same time he was making Super Shark.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
There's another one with Lou Diamond Phillips called, I don't know, Red something or other. Yeah. Yeah, then let us not forget Tinto Ria, Jaws of Death, or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Another fucking slow-moving piece of shit movie.
Oh, yeah.
That was another one that came out around the same time as Jaws.
Yeah, that Orca, there was quite a few of them, and they were all in trouble because the people from Jaws were trying to sue them.
Orca was a whole different fish. But if you want to go, you know, you had Piranha, too. They were using that as like a mini Jaws. Then you have Mega Shark versus Croctopus or some other fucked up thing on the Sci-Fi Channel. Croctopus. Hey,
I thought you knew a girl that you called that.
Yeah, I know. Croctopus. Crotch crickets. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of fucking weird shit, you know, with that stuff. Some of the stuff's highly entertaining, though. I got to give it that. There was one Pterodactyl, which wasn't bad. There's been a few that haven't been too bad. But for the most part, they suck. But, you know what it is? It's like Kyra says. It's like the old, you know, Saturday night horror movie shit. You watch the Sci-Fi Channel and get, you know, your mind numbed by it. It's entertainment. That's the other thing, too, is, you know, horror has gone so mainstream now, it's almost passé. Because I remember horror used to run in cycles. Sort of like wrestling, because wrestling's down now. But you'd have a year where maybe there was only one or two horror movies hit drive-ins. There was really nothing. Then you'd have, like, you know, a year like 76 where it'd be a ton of this shit out, you know? So it's weird. If you ever think of it, you know, anybody listening think of it, just go back and look at releases for certain, you know, like, you know, if you went 70, 71, 72, 73, just look at how many releases came out per year back then, and then look as opposed to how much crap comes out every fucking week now. Because that's why a lot of the 70s films, like, you know, The Corpse Grinders, Blood Orgy of the She-Devils, 60, you know, The Flesh Eaters, Blood Feast, they're all unique because people waited for this shit to come out. Because, you know, there was no anticipation. There was no, you know, no big hype like there is for everything now. It was like, you had your radio spots, which were unrelenting, and you had a couple TV spots. But it was mostly radio that sold the stuff. Now it's like, you know, the internet sells it all and kills it. But, you know, going back to what I'm saying, that was the thing, because you would have a dry spell, you know. I can't even think. I know there was one time in the 70s where I think I only saw two horror movies pop up at drive-ins all year. It was dead. That one year or another year after that, too, it was dead. There was hardly, you know, a couple things came out. I'm trying to think when Tales from the Crypt came out, because that was a good fucking year. But that sort of came out around the winter time, too. So that worked up, you know, because of the Santa Claus theme in there and stuff. But, yeah, it's just, really, you know, really weird, the whole progression of things. Everything was geared to a specific thing back then, and you waited for the stuff. And, you know, another thing was, too, especially with stuff running in New York, that, you know, they throw something in. Opening day was a Wednesday. And, if it didn't draw nothing Wednesday and it had a shitty Thursday, it would be gone by Friday, because they would put something in to make money for the weekend. So that's how all that went down. Yeah,
that's
times
true.
Change.
Yeah.
Times fucking change, but, you know.
I remember, though, when I was growing up, every week had some kind of a genre movie for somebody. There was like a horror movie, a sci-fi movie, a comedy, a drama. There was more variety. Like, it seems like now, I mean, there were some times that were a dry spell, but, like, the Empire Theater, for me, like, every week there'd be something there that would be of interest to a horror fan or a sci-fi fan or someone who liked teenage comedies or, you know, goofy stuff like Blazing Stewardesses. And then there would be, like, the love story type movies. And, you know, there was always some kind of something going on that was a variety. Whereas a lot of times now, we'll look at the theaters and there's, like, PG-13 or PG kids movies taking the whole entire theater. And we'll go 6 months without a horror film. And I'm like, Jesus, man, there hasn't been anything there except for maybe one stupid raunchy comedy like Hangover, which is lame compared to the comedies that used to come out in the 70s and early 80s. And all the, you know, these movies want to be Animal House but don't have the balls. And you're sitting there and you're going, what happened to the day when we had some kind of variety? Because even though there were sometimes it would have a dry spell, we'd still have some kind of exploitation trash to watch somewhere. And we don't have that anymore.
No, you know, when certain stuff came out, like, I'll go back to, like, I think it was either, was it, when was it, 30 Dozen, 64, in that area, right? That was a fucking event, okay? That, those things were events when the, when these, and, you know, I'll say that 30 Dozen was a grindhouse picture, because it was. It was an action flick.
Oh, yeah.
But these things were events when they came out. You know, it wasn't like, oh, well, you know, we got, there's fucking 18 movies opening this weekend. Two or three movies would open on a fucking weekend. And they would play the big houses. You know? And, you know, everything else would be second run theater, you know? Or, you know, they throw, you know, first run thing out and have something, you know, second run on the bottom. But, you know, a lot of the stuff, like, remember the big ones down by me were Newark, which wasn't the place to go. It was the Bradford, the Paramount. And I'm trying to think what the hell the other one was. Bradford, Paramount. And it was something else. But that's where your big premiere movies were down there. The big theaters. And it was the same around Times Square. You know, certain shit would pop up in certain places, and that would be your big event. And everything else was, you know, stuff we wanted to see. So, but they do it up in a grand fucking style. You know, it was like, you know, the, everybody says, oh, it was garish, it was this. You know something? I don't give a fuck, but that was cool. Those lobbies full of posters and standees and lobby cards and stills and shit. That sucked you into the whole thing.
Oh, you know? It did. I agree.
Yeah. And you don't have that anymore. You have, you know, the shitty fucking, you know, screen grab posters they put out. There's no artwork on them at all. That's another thing, too. Everything was drawn up in garish back then, which drew you in, you know?
Or did,
not
yeah.
This shit, you know? So, that's why you go on eBay and you see all, you know, current posters and stuff. You can buy, a lot of 100. Who gives a fuck? Nobody wants them anymore. They're mass-produced. I swear, Ted told me once the Corpse Grinders, there was only 1,000 poster run. So, literally, you know, there was only 1,000 Corpse Grinders posters in circulation. Probably ain't even close to that anymore. How many got destroyed, thrown out, and whatever?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah. That's one true. Thing about these guys, you know, that's why this stuff's, you know, truly collectible from that era, because there wasn't a shitload of it made. There was only X amount of it made. And you had to return the shit, and they kept, you know, using it over and over again. Especially the 50s stuff and the 40s stuff with that, you know, heavy stock that they were printing on.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah, different times, my friends, different times. You know, and to me, they were better times. I was just, somebody just emailed me today about, man, I wish I grew up in your era. And I said, you don't know how glad I am I did, because, you know, truthfully, what are guys like me looking at, you know? Not too much. Like I said, I'm going out in 2 years. I'm collecting Social Security in 2 years. Fuck it, I'm done. I got to pay my bills. Can't play games anymore. I may as well get my money, because I paid my money in. I may as well get it and try to enjoy myself until the inevitable. You know, that's the way I look at it. So, not to be morose or anything, but, you know, a lot of guys ain't here anymore, and I'm glad I am. But, you know, something, we're not guaranteed tomorrow. None of us. You found that out too. So, you know,
sure did.
Scary fucking thing.
It is. It sucks.
Yeah. So we're just about out of time now. So I will say to everyone a fond adieu and stay sick until next week. And hopefully we'll come up with something else interesting or another interesting guest or something, because you never know here. So until then, bye.
window for a mere $3.50. That's your ticket to an all-night, 24/7 evening at the Grindhouse. You want spaghetti westerns? How about The Man with No Name? Django? Yeah, they're all in here. How about some bikers like the Hell's Angels, Satan's Slaves, Satan's Sadists? You want some blood and guts? Well, how about H.G. Lewis, Andy Milligan, John Carpenter, George A. Romero, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Ghastly Ones, Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS? All those hot, horny mistresses guaranteed to dominate your dreams. They're all yours right here in the Grindhouse.